Coming up on New York Now, a current and former state senator get indicted in Albany.
I am saddened and I'm sickened at the ridiculous and baseless charges that have been put against me by Attorney General Eric Schneiderman.
Governor Cuomo bashes an amendment in Congress's new health care plan proposed by two representatives from New York.
It is cheap politics at best.
And the interim president of the University at Albany joins us in studio.
We need the tuition increases to keep up with the rising costs.
It's next on New York Now, right here on PBS.
Funding for New York Now is provided by WNET. Winner of a New York State Emmy for Best Political Program, this is New York Now.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another edition of New York Now. I'm Matt Ryan. My partner from the Times Union, Casey Seiler, is off today. It was certainly a big news week across the country and here in the Empire State. John Campbell of the USA Today Network will join me later on for some analysis. But before that, let's all get on the same page as we take a look at the week's headlines. Starting off with Governor Cuomo railing against the amendment in the Republican health care bill proposed by upstate Congressman Chris Collins and John Faso that would shift Medicaid costs from the counties back to the state.
It would be an additional $2.3 billion cut to Medicaid. And that's just in the areas in upstate New York and Long Island. That's where the amendment is effective. New York is the only state in the nation affected by this amendment. The only state in the nation. And it is cheap politics at best. Because what the congresspeople say is, well, if the county doesn't have to pay their share, then the county can reduce taxes. Yeah, what they leave out is, if the county doesn't pay its share, there's another $2.3 billion cut to Medicaid on top of everything else, and that means less people are going to get health care assistance. That means more hospitals, more nursing homes are going to close. That's what that means. There is no ferry that is going to float down and hand over $2.3 billion to make up the shortfall that the county's left.
The other big story of the week saw a current and former Western New York State Senator get indicted in Albany. Attorney General Eric Schneiderman brought eight charges of filing a false instrument, three against Senator Rob Ortz and five against his predecessor, George Maziarz. According to the AG's office, Ortz participated in an effort to get his wife a no-show job as a graphic designer that paid $21,000 over 4 years. Despite her performing no actual work. Ortz, a Republican, was adamant in his defense after appearing in Albany County courts.
I just want to say, as someone who has fought in combat for his country, who has served his city as the mayor, and who has served his state as a New York State senator, I am saddened and I'm sickened at the ridiculous and baseless charges that have been put against me by Attorney General Eric Schneiderman. I have no doubt the only reason I'm involved in this case and was a part of this investigation is to make it more politically appealing and to further Eric Schneiderman's partisan agenda, which has been well documented. The constituents, my constituents in the 62nd District know me. They know what kind of person I am and they know what kind of public servant I have been. I am guilty of nothing. I will fight these charges and I believe I will prevail. I want to thank all the folks who have reached out to me over the last 12 hours with their show of support, and they have been many. And again, I will fight these charges. I am guilty of nothing. And I look forward to telling New Yorkers the truth about Eric Schneiderman and about myself. Thank you.
What would you like to say to your constituents?
That's what I want to say.
That I'm guilty of nothing. Are you going to stay in your seat?
Yes, I am. I'm not guilty. I'm not resigning. I believe that the truth will come out and I'll be exonerated and vindicated. Thank you.
Later that afternoon, George Maziarz, who served for two decades in the Senate before retiring in 2015, faced a judge as well. He is alleged to have orchestrated a multi-layered pass-through operation that enabled him to use money from his campaign account and from the Niagara County GOP account to pay a former staffer who left government work amid sexual harassment charges.
My attorney made all the statements.
Maziarz did not speak to reporters after his court appearance. His lawyers deny all charges. The two are due back in court on May 8th. And finally, New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio made a trip up to the Capitol this week to continue his push for an expansion of the millionaire's tax, along with a tax on homes purchased in New York City worth over $2 million.
Right now, as we speak, the whole debate over the Affordable Care Act is proceeding, and the Republican plan would give huge tax cuts to the wealthy and the insurance companies. So before you even get to the quote-unquote tax reform that President Trump's been talking about, which is really a tax giveaway to the wealthy, you could already see a whole change on the health care front that will already advantage those who have so much. So right now, people are expecting the rest of us to fight back. They're expecting our leaders in Albany to do something about it and to right the situation by asking the wealthy to pay more in state and local taxes. That's how we address the madness we're seeing in Washington and the lies we're seeing in Washington. We have a chance here in New York State to live up to our reputation as the most progressive state in the country.
Joining us now for some analysis of the week's news is our friend and colleague from the USA Today Network, John Campbell. John, great to have a fellow Western New Yorker on, but particularly this week as Western New York politics was really in the spotlight. Let's start off with the Collins-Faso Amendment. John Faso from the Hudson Valley, Chris Collins, one of the first Donald Trump supporters from Western New York. We talked about the healthcare amendment. That was really in the spotlight nationally this week, wasn't it?
Yeah, you've seen Chris Collins really grow into this really prominent role during this healthcare debate. And it all centers on what critics are calling, the Buffalo Bribe.
Right.
And that is this amendment that would allow it would essentially take counties off the hook from having to pay their Medicaid costs in New York. And in all likelihood, that would shift it to the state, or the state would be forced to cut. And Collins has painted it as this mandate relief, really,
right,
for local governments. And it's something that local governments have pushed for a long time. But it's really spurred this war in New York between the governor's office, which really does not want to see this amendment part of the health care deal, doesn't want to see the health care bill passed at all,
right,
and local governments and some upstate congresspeople, including Mr. Collins, that really want to see this amendment get through.
We saw just how annoyed Andrew Cuomo was in that videotape visually that day. We heard him talk like a presidential candidate in 2020. I hate to say that, but he was calling out Paul Ryan, using words like, you know, rabid conservatives. I mean, he was really going against the bill, and then particularly this amendment. And we saw something fascinating that we haven't seen on social media. Andrew Cuomo and his staff going back and forth with John Faso and Chris Collins. Collins and Faso were not backing down,
right,
were they?
Right. It's just incredible sparring on social media between some of the top aides to the governor and the congresspeople and whomever runs their social media accounts.
Mm-hmm.
But this is the first time in the 7 years that the governor has been in office that he's really been on the ropes legislatively with something like this.
That's a good way of describing it.
And you've seen him him and his office. I mean, it's obvious that their strategy is to try to paint this as an apocalypse, as a disaster waiting to happen. And they're pulling out all the stops. I mean, they had conference calls with editorial writers. They've been having press conferences, sending out press releases, you know, painting what they view as the damage this would do, rallying the healthcare industry, the hospitals, the providers, et cetera, that are, speaking out against this now. And they are really, really forcefully pushing back because, you know, the governor is not in a position of strength on this, really, and he's trying to rally the people against it. But that being said, you know, there are the Congress people are doing the same thing because they're trying to rally the people and say, hey, listen, this is your local government's, your county government's biggest share, biggest expense. And if we can take that off their books, you'll see your property taxes go down. And this whole debate is where we're going round and round and round and round.
And the Cuomo administration, I guess it was on Wednesday, sent several emails detailing the specific hospitals and the specific nursing homes that would get cut, how much money they would lose. And they did it in not only Collins' district or Faso's district, but other Republicans as well. Yeah. Elise Stefanik in the North Country, Lee Zeldin down on Eastern Long Island, Claudia Tenney in the Southern Tier. Yeah, it's something we haven't really seen. And I like how you described it of Cuomo being on the ropes, because I think that's accurate. The other big Western New York story this week, you and I were in Albany County Court on Thursday, not for ourselves, but for a former and a former and current Western New York state senator. Let's start with Rob Ortz, 8 total charges of filing a false instrument, kind of a fancy way of saying hiding money and hiding payments. Rob Ortz, kind of a backbencher in the GOP. He was just elected in 2014. Casual observer has no idea who he is. That seemed to come out of nowhere.
Yeah, what didn't come out of nowhere is his predecessor, George Maziarz, who was a senator for 20 years and really rose to become a power broker in Niagara County and Western New York as a whole. You know, his campaign finance records and the Niagara County Republicans' campaign finance records have been under investigation for years at this point. And we'd never really seen anything come of it. Now it appears that those various investigations also swept up Rob Ortz, the senator who he was elected in 2014. He was just elected to a second term last year. And the state attorney general, Eric Schneiderman, has accused him of essentially getting his wife a no-show job because when he was elected North Tonawanda mayor 7 years ago, he was going to be taking a pay cut. So he's accusing them of orchestrating this scheme to get his wife a no-show job of $5,000 a year to cover that pay cut.
Right.
And then the filings to the state didn't show the payments to his wife, but showed it through these pass-through entities, these public relations companies. Ort has been very forceful against this.
Yes.
He has painted it as a political witch hunt against him. He is. He's hired a PR firm to help him. He hired a well-known attorney,
high-profile lawyer in Albany.
Exactly, and they're trying to paint this as Eric Schneiderman, a Democrat, coming
political
after
witch hunt.
Exactly.
40 seconds left. Maziarz. We knew he was being investigated by the Moreland Commission, but he's under the spotlight now too.
Yeah, the 8-count indictment against Ort and Maziarz. 3 of them were against Ort. 5 of them were against Maziarz. It's the same kind of thing. He was allegedly paying a former staff member who resigned his government spot because of sexual harassment claims, but continued to pay him through the campaign, but shielded those payments to him through another pass-through entity and to another public relations company. So it's the same kind of idea, the same allegations, and both pleaded not guilty.
All right, we will have to see where that goes to. They're due back in court in May. John and I go deeper into these Western New York political stories on our latest New York Now podcast. You can head to nynow.org or subscribe to us on iTunes or any of the other places where podcasts are available. John, thanks for coming in today.
Thanks for having me.
Let's reveal this week's New York Now poll question. Do you support the American Healthcare Act? As always, let us know by logging on to our website, nynow.org. Last time around, we asked if you thought Roe v. Wade would ever be overturned, and 68% said no. Mariah in Queensbury, watching on Mountain Lake PBS, voted no, saying, "I think the Republicans love to use this issue to court voters. As long as they have this carrot, they will use it." And finally, Julie in Elmira, watching on WSKG, said, "I don't know how anyone can look at an ultrasound and say that baby is not a person. Abortion is murder." You can vote on this week's poll once again at nynow.org. All right, joining us now is Jim Steller, the interim president at the University at Albany, or as us locals call it, UAlbany. Jim, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
The conversation now and for much of the next week, as you might imagine, is around the budget. Earlier this year, Governor Andrew Cuomo, one of his proposals involved free tuition at SUNY schools for qualifying families under $125,000 a year. You and other SUNY and CUNY presidents came out in support of this. Why?
Well, I think the first thing is it's just great to have the governor and the government talking about public higher education. That topic needs to be on people's minds. Second, I think we need to expand, and we are to try to support the new colleges that we can talk about later. Mm-hmm. And so this plays right into our own plans of trying to grow to 20,000 students. And finally, I have to say, I love it when the governor used the word free. Even though there's room and board to be considered here, that gets us a second look by a lot of kids, and that helps us sell ourselves to them as a great bargain and a great opportunity.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask. What does this do for the number of applicants, admissions now? I mean, did they go way up, or how does this change? Do you anticipate, at least?
We think they'll go up. We're up 6% already before the Excelsior Scholarship Program was out. So the word is getting out that the University at Albany is a good place to be. But this will help us even more. So obviously, we're all for it.
The Commission on Independent Colleges and Universities in New York came out with a report 2 weeks ago that estimated around 54,000 fewer students would enroll in private institutions if this is adopted. A lot of private schools, for example, St. John Fisher, Nazareth out in Rochester, and one just down the road from UAlbany on Western Avenue, the College of St. Rose, they expressed their concerns along with the local Sage colleges as well. What do you say to them? Do you understand their concerns?
Well, I spent 30 years in the privates, first at Harvard and then at Northeastern University in Boston, so I certainly understand. And we've also been talking. We've had a number of forums and interactions, so I think they have a point. But I do think that we have a number of differences. For example, we don't set our tuition. The state does. We are obligated to serve the citizens of New York. We will have international students. We will have students from out of state. But fundamentally, we were built by the taxpayers. We serve the state of New York folks. The privates can do other things. So I think that I understand their points, but I think they have options that we don't have, and I think they should work on those options. If you look at the history of Northeastern, back when I was there, it expanded its reach across the nation and made itself into a fine, stable, budgetarily sound institution. So I hope they will be okay. I want them to be okay. We need a variety of schools in the capital region. We need each other. So I'm hoping that they'll be able to do okay. But in the meantime, thank you, Governor.
The SUNY 2020 legislation that was signed into law in 2011, that expired last year. It allowed tuition to be raised, what, $300 per year for 5 years. SUNY officials earlier this year were pushing a rational tuition increase. You were in support of that, right?
I was. And rational tuition simply means that there'll be a number chosen, $250, that it will go up predictably for the next few years, or at least there's the possibility of that. This would be controlled by the SUNY Board of Trustees. Mm-hmm. That gives families a chance to plan, and more importantly, it gives us a chance to stay affordable, but to stay excellent. We need the tuition increases to keep up with the rising costs of prices, because even though I mentioned earlier we are a public entity, we still pay the same when we go out to purchase something in the market. So so we need it to be excellent, and we need to be excellent for our students. So I'm a huge supporter of small, rational tuition increases over a period of time. I hope it passes.
You mentioned the word small. This has been something that legislators have not been thrilled with. In the past year or so, the SUNY 2020 plan was not renewed.
Right.
They're not big fans of increasing tuition. How difficult is that going to be? What are your local representatives saying to you?
Well, the local representatives that we've talked about certainly understand our arguments, and they want the University at Albany to remain excellent and a powerful institution in the city and in the state. And we think this is important. So they get that. But I also understand the idea that debt is growing in America for college. We think we're contributing to that less than most other institutions, so we still feel pretty good about ourselves. But I do understand that the easiest thing, the best thing, would be perhaps if it was completely free. But that has its own issues, and it doesn't seem like that's going to happen. So if we're in this affordable tuition on the affordable side of the curve, let's just make sure we keep pace with our expenses so we can stay strong and stay excellent for our students.
All right, shifting gears, those who have followed Andrew Cuomo's tenure as governor know how much he stresses the importance of communities being prepared for emergencies. We've certainly had our share of them, weather-related, especially since Andrew Cuomo took office. But your university has something no one else in the nation has, and that is the first standalone college of emergency preparedness, homeland security, and cybersecurity. This is an idea that the governor started with a couple years ago, but it's actually now become a reality at UAlbany, hasn't it?
It absolutely has. When I came here 2 years ago, he gave the State of the State speech. I came here expecting to start a College of Engineering and Applied Sciences with the president, and I found out that as provost that we were starting two. We were thrilled. This idea was actually incubated in a number of places, but including at our university. When it came to be, we had to go through the bureaucracy of getting things approved. It took us a year to get the major, the undergraduate homeland major, approved. We did that. We also started the minor right away because that doesn't require the same sort of approval. We were stunned at the number of students that signed up for the minor. We're now over 300. And then when we opened the major, we thought the minor would drain off because these were placeholders, but they didn't. They were replenished, and now we have over 300 majors. So we've had just an enormous interest. This is also something where we think students will be able to get jobs. The university wants to have a high impact on people's lives. Mm-hmm. This is a great way to do it. And then the cybersecurity stuff has just taken off. That's been another element which adds to the emergency preparedness and homeland security.
One of the stories of 2016, for sure.
One of the stories of 2016, and we're going to do that in business, we're going to do that in engineering, and we're going to lead it from this Homeland Security College.
You talked about the numbers, currently over 225 declared majors, over 150 intended majors, surpassing the five-year enrollment targets in its first year. Did this surprise you, this level of interest so soon?
Well, we thought...
Were you prepared for it?
We thought we would do well, but we didn't think we would do that well. Now, we have mechanisms of compensation, so primarily we're preparing for this by hiring up to 15 faculty. We've got a plan that takes a few years to do that. And then we'll have probably the equivalent number of faculty who will be outside the college who will be brought in as practitioners, people from the state agencies and other places, because we really want this to be an outward-facing college, another interesting difference. But we can compensate easily by hiring folks in that category right away. So we can teach these folks. And, you know, it's just wonderful to be popular. You go to the dance and everybody wants to dance with you. You leave tired, but you feel good about
yourself.
Especially
when you're the new girl or the new guy. From some of the photos that I've seen, it's not just a theory in classes, but the kids are kind of, the young men and women, or maybe a little older men and women, are actually going out in the field and experiencing getting their hands dirty.
Right. So we have a partnership with Oriskany where we do emergency preparedness training. We also have a course built into the curriculum in which they get credit for doing an internship. And this is the way in which we want to have the students be outward facing. I mentioned earlier how we would like the faculty to come as practitioners as well as core faculty. So this is part of a new concept that we think will really prepare these students well and also maybe serve as an example for other things that could happen in higher education.
And with a major like this, it was important to kind of set up partnerships with agencies, right? And you've done that at the state level?
Well, we have. We have a great advantage as a university at Albany of being in the city, so all the state agencies are around us. So we have, as you mentioned, a major project called MesoNet with the Homeland Security Department where we're building 126 weather stations. So that's one of the ways that you can become insecure is to have weather hit you, Hurricane Sandy, mm-hmm. and the other way, obviously, is through human activity like 9/11. So we'll take on both of those things, and they'll all be folded into a brand new building that we're going to open in 2020 called the E-Tech Building, which will bring the homeland and the weather people together along with entrepreneurship. So this is just going to turn out to be a story that gets better and better and better for the university.
The governor touted that, I remember, a couple years ago in an interview with the MesoNets that are being built and put all throughout the state, trying to anticipate the nasty weather before, you know, a few minutes before we normally do.
Absolutely. We have a finger lake effect snow that can put 6 feet in one town and 6 inches in the next. You can waste a lot of money rolling your trucks if you had 6 inches, and you can get behind if you have 6 feet. We need to do a much better job of predicting the weather. Then there's other kinds of things. There was a microburst of wind recently in Rochester that we could possibly maybe predict. I mean, these are the kinds of things that we want to take on with this complicated, dense, modern system. And that'll also tie into things like big data analytics, which is another buzzword that helps us as a university. So I think that this is a great story.
Finally, any other universities from across the country contacting UAlbany? You know, we heard about this program you're doing. You know, maybe this is something we're interested in. Has that been is that a conversation that's been had?
It has, and we just hired a new dean for this college, which by shorthand we sometimes call Homeland, and he's from the Federal Homeland Security Department. So in the process of doing that search, we got lots of input from places all over the country, and everybody was very interested in the integration of emergency preparedness, homeland, and cybersecurity, because lots of other programs have pieces of it. But we seem to be the only one I know of, who's got it all together in a college dedicated to serving the state.
All right. And Jim Steller, thanks for joining us, the interim president at the University at Albany. Appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
One last reminder to head to our website, nynow.org. It is where you can find all of our past programs, plus links to us on social media, including Twitter, where our handle is at nynow_PBS. You'll also find a link to the Capital Confidential blog run by Casey Seiler and his staff. It's also at timesunion.com. Next week, when we join you, we'll have to see how close we are to a budget agreement. Who knows? They might be voting next Friday, or we may have our first significantly late budget under Andrew Cuomo. We shall see. It is due on Saturday, April 1st. And that will do it for us this week. We leave you today with something a bit unusual. Speaker Carl Hastie, an obvious Trekkie, correcting a reporter about what really happened in the 1982 Star Trek film, The Wrath of Khan. I'm Matt Ryan. Thanks for watching, and we'll see you next time right here on your local PBS station.
You agree that Star Trek II is the best Star Trek movie?
Absolutely.
Wrath of Khan was the best.
Right? I saw what you said. Yeah, yeah. He actually, when he yelled Khan, that wasn't at the end of the movie.
It wasn't at the end?
No.
Didn't he yell it over and over again?
No. When he did that, right. That was because Spock was giving him a code on how long it would take him to get the ship fixed. Remember, okay. He said hours right. would be day, days would be hours.
Okay.
So Spock was trying to tell him how long it would take to repair the ship.
Okay.
So he was just mentally messing with Khan, letting Khan think that he screwed him and deserted him there.
It was when Khan marooned Kirk on the planet.
Okay. Well, he thought he marooned him on the planet.
Who were you mentally messing with over there?
It's true. And before Spock died, he said, the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few or the one.
You know we're all leading with that. It's
a great political quote.
Funding for New York Now is provided by WNET.